Hello and welcome to another edition of the In Context podcast. Today I have another friend of mine, a good friend Mo. He's a member of New Life Church in Middlesbrough. How are you doing, Mo?
I'm very well, thank you, Ian. It's a pleasure. It's a pleasure to be here.
Oh,
long awaited meeting.
Thanks for joining us, brother. First of all, rather than me introduce yourself, why don't you share a little bit about yourself, where you're from, how you come to faith, and what brings you to New Life Church in Middlesbrough?
Okay. My full name is Mofi Infolua. Yeah, but it's more for sure that I'm sure you have a hard time to pronounce that. It's six syllables. But then that means I give praise to God. Where I come from, our names are in sentences because it has to make sense somehow. I'm sure you understand what I mean.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's Mo for short. And yes, I'm a Christian. That's the first way I want to introduce myself because that's the first thing I always want to be seen in me. And I'm a Nigerian. I come from one of the most populated Southwest states. That's Ogun State, even though I lived in Lagos State most of my life, but my state of origin is Ogun State, and I'm Yoruba by tradition. We've got three major tribes in Nigeria, and I'm a Yoruba man from Nigeria, and like I said, I'm a Christian, so that's the basic factor of my identity. And what brings me to New Life Church? Is that a question again?
Yeah.
Trying to recall. Okay. Interestingly, I came with an open mind to England and Middlesbrough, and I just expected to come across a fellowship I was comfortable with in my spirit. And it was a hard time, I must confess. I'd been in a couple of places, but then I wasn't convinced. My spirit just didn't click with it. But then we always prayed about it, myself and my wife, just having that Christian fellowship where we know that this is really about Christ. This is Christ-centered. It's not just a community gathering. And one of those days, a friend of mine told me, he knew the cry of my heart anyway, that, oh, I've been in a place. That's Calvin. Anyway, I'm sure you know Calvin. I've been in a place. I think you will like it. And initially, I almost declined. I said, I've been in a couple of places. I think they're all the same. not like I'm trying to be judgmental here, but the truth is that you know what you want when you see it and you know it. And then I decided to give it a try. And in my first meeting, I was convinced that this people conscious of the person of Christ, and who I saw from the doctrines I could perceive, I was comfortable, and I knew it was a place in which I could easily integrate in the faith. So that's how I found New Life Church, and I must say I'm enjoying myself.
So share a little bit about church in Nigeria. What was it like when you were first saved? How did you first become a Christian, and what was church like for you in Nigeria?
Okay. Let me explain it this way, because it's a little bit dicey when people ask me how I became a Christian, you know, but I think I'm able to still explain two different phases. First is to say I was born into a Christian home. I had that advantage, unlike some other Christians today who, you know, we're not in the right environment. So I was brought up by very godly parents. My dad especially, someone I respect. When I think of the fruits, my dad is glorified now. But then the little time we spent together was enough to make me use for a lifetime when I want to think of Christian values and the fruit of the Spirit in which I could identify in him. And this was a man who was always there. It was not that kind of father who was too busy to spend time with us. Yes, he was into ministry. He was into secular work and all some other forms of vocations. But then family was very important to him. And he knew each of us intimately. And the best of what he wanted to pour out to each and every one of us was the Christ he had in him. And we saw a whole lot of that. We had an healthy dose of what he had to show. And just like people say, when you want to teach a child things, children learn things faster when they see you do it than when you tell them. So my dad lived an exemplary Christian life in which I still hold on to those values today. But then being born in a Christian home, having that kind of father was not enough to make me born again. It only created a conducive atmosphere for me. So I think while I was just about a clock 14, I guess, probably not a couple of years back, we lost him, you know, and that was the turnaround phase for me, really, because not going to the reality of not going to see my dad again and all that, it's got me broken, sincerely, and it was an opportunity for the Holy Spirit to break into me that you see all this church tradition, there's something more than this. There's something that transcends the present time into eternity. You really need to get serious with these things. And I must say, in the course of my brokenness, that phase of my life, that was when I could really sit down to say, what exactly does it mean to be born again? I think I really want to get this to the next level. And I can recall that the first time ever that I would say I asked Jesus in my life, I was alone in my room. I just took, you know, in retrospect, I thought about all I've been through, thought about my dad's life, how he's been an example. And I'm like, I want to be like him. I love the life he lived. And I really want to have that thing he had, which was the Christ, and I wanted to take this path now. I didn't want to do church. I didn't want to be a Christian because I was born into a Christian home. I didn't want to be a Christian because we were told to be Christians. I wanted to know Christ for myself, and I asked Jesus in my heart, by myself, all in my room. The Holy Spirit just got me arrested, and I must say it's been a beautiful experience. Yeah, experience of growth. Yeah, that was the first time, but of course I've had hiccups along the line, and God at some point raised people, raised fathers, you know, raised counselors at different points in my life, you know, through the discipleship phase, you know, and through the discovery of myself and how I could integrate into living the life of Christ, regardless of my consciousness of, you know, my environment and all of that. But I must say it's been a beautiful experience. God has been faithful. He has raised men sincerely for every phase of my life to, you know, see me through processes of discipleship, at least till I got to a point where I could easily know that, oh, thank God, if I look back, there have been testimonies about my salvation story.
Awesome. So you've mentioned there that there was a number of godly men who came in and discipled you and, gave you like
that's true. One man particularly, I must say, one major man, and then of course a few other people along the line. Yeah. But I've had a counselor from my teenage days. I just met him somehow. I wouldn't say I met him by accident. He was a missionary who was in the neighborhood, and he just used to organize his fellowships on Sunday evenings. And of course, as a church boy, like I said, I was interested in things like that, and I kept going. And somehow, you know, we went through phases. Like I said, I was a teenager. A lot was still going on. I was just out of secondary school, mm-hmm. seeking admission into the university and all of that. You know, a lot of discoveries. At some point, I found myself in the middle of bad relationships, bad friends, trying to learn new things that were not godly. Even after I had given my life to Christ, you know, it was a phase of growth. And someone like him was there to always ask questions and always making us see the meaning of what we did, made us understand certain aspects of the scriptures, put us in a position where we could understand how not to condemn ourselves, how that when we fall, our fall is not to say we lost our salvation, but our fall is to get us up and run back to God again. You know, all those things, I needed some more clarity. And somehow it was just there, and God gave me the grace to maintain that relationship. It was always there. Interestingly, I still spoke with him this morning. You know, he called me and prayed for me. And I'm talking about an experience that has, you know, it's over 20 years having this relationship. So he's one major father I have that has been of spiritual impact to me, that's among some other people I have met in life. But he's just a major person that has been there all the way. So anytime I think dad is not around to do some things, you know, I'm grateful to God that he's able to, you know, make up for it somehow.
Yeah. Oh, cool. So discipleship was important. What was the Sunday church service like, and the weekly life of the church that you belong to in Nigeria?
Yes, almost a similar story for the way I just talked about how I discovered New Life Church. When I was done with the university and I was coming back home, I had a different perspective to church, and I really wanted something more than the regular church for tradition, or, you know, some excesses I had come to understand in the church. And I just wanted something deeper. I wanted something more intimate. I wanted something Christ-centered. I didn't want the gospel of Christ for what I wanted. I wanted something to really work on my heart for growth. And I went all around searching for a church. Of course, not a perfect church, but a church that was conscious of the person of Christ and wanted to stay in that limit so that we don't get conformed. Sincerely speaking, a lot of churches have conformed, you know, to the style of the New Age movement and all that. But I was pretty conscious. Thank God for discipleship. So we knew at least what we were looking for from what we didn't want. And along the line, I discovered a place that I noticed the doctrine was quite Christ-centered, and I became a member. And from there, I started to grow. That's not to discredit my own church, I must say. But then I just wanted something more than they played their part. You know, I have to acknowledge that my childhood church memories. I started from the Foursquare Gospel Church. It's an international church. It's everywhere. It's here in the UK. It's in the US. I think it started from the US before they came into Nigeria. And the Foursquare Gospel Church has really done a whole lot. You know, our childhood days, you know, the growth, the teachings and what have you. My parents were clergy in Foursquare Gospel Church. But, you know, there was just that point in my life. I wanted something more than that was for the phase. It was another level, which I wanted something more intimate. And I really needed to explore a Christ-centered doctrine, consistent teachings, just to give me a leap forward in the walk of the faith. Mm-hmm. And then I discovered Integrity Worship Center. Lagos Church is called the Miners' Place. And that was where I was until I came into the UK.
So what was the Sunday service like? What was the length of service? What was the worship like? And what were you used to before you came to the UK on a Sunday?
Okay, it's pretty different. I must say, in Africa or in Nigeria where I grew up, church, talking of, I think you mentioned something about timing now. Yeah. I think we spend more time in church to fellowship. Not in every case, actually, but maybe most of the churches I have joined. Yeah. We spend more time in church. And for someone like me in particular, you know, I've always been someone who has been busy with something or the other, some activities in church. So even when service is short, we might always have a reason to hold some meetings. You do this, you fix that. I took pleasure in doing all those stuff. At some point, I was music director. At some point, I was just a keyboardist. At some point, I got into some level of church leadership, handling finance, administrative issues. And I have always been close to all my pastors, let me put it that way. So I've always been a busy person within the four walls of the church. And if I will talk of my own personal experience, I spend hours in church, because if not for the service itself, it's for other subunits, you know, meetings and what have you. But on the average, I will say churches in the UK have more discipline with timing. You know, this is an administrative issue now. I wouldn't say it's a spiritual thing, but when it comes to timing, you know, I can come to church here in the UK and say, okay, church is going to be over this time. I'm going to be at home at this time. But church back home, you know, the spirit can just take over and increase. increase your stay in Georgia, and you know, but it can be fun. It can be fun. It also has its own interesting sides.
So you were in a good church. You had discipleship and friends, and you were part of a culture and a country that you were familiar with. And then you moved thousands of miles to the UK, where the culture's different, the weather's different, and the church is different. What were some of your fears and concerns when first coming to the UK?
To be honest, my major fears were centered around my kids, my family, my kids especially. I was very worried at some point, thinking about the extreme aspects of the new culture here in the UK, how I will have to explain so many things I never had to explain before, things they will see and wonder, Dad, why is this like this? Why is it like that? And I knew I was in for a serious work when it comes to getting closer to my kids and, you know, trying to ensure that their worldview, even as kids, doesn't change. Yeah. That the way they think like children who has been trained in a godly environment. And I was really concerned for issues like, you know, those were some certain moral values that they never really needed to be taught back home in Nigeria, because the culture already condemns certain extremeness. But here, they see those things as normal things, dress sense and what have you. And sincerely speaking, I've been answering questions over and again. My kids have seen more of the Bible daddy than it was in Nigeria, because I always have to make reference to the scriptures. I always have to instill both the moral and the godly values continuously. And I think that's some work anyone who's having the same experience as I have had would have to work on. God is faithful. God is faithful. He's going to be there for them. We also pray for them. But that was my major concern when I was coming to the UK.
Yeah. Yeah, I can imagine. It's concerning for many of us Christians who have been born and raised in the UK with some of the cultural changes that have happened so quickly over the last few years. And you mentioned when we were chatting a while back about when you started researching Middlesbrough, when you knew you were going to be moving to Middlesbrough, and you researched Middlesbrough, you found some statistics that were quite worrying and concerning. So what was your first impression before you arrived here of what Middlesbrough would be like, and what is your actual impression now you've been living here for some time now?
I think... well, my expectations were not the same thing as the reality I met. Maybe I overestimated the way it was explained. I did my research, and I can recall one of the first things I saw was I was checking the most dangerous places in England.
Yeah.
And for different writers, Middlesbrough, Cleveland always appeared. If not number one, it's going to be number two. And I was wondering, why is it Middlesbrough I'm going to, and it has this kind of reputation, you know? But sincerely speaking, on arriving, of course, we stayed conscious. We knew we had a lot to discover. We knew we had a lot to learn. Let's see how things work here and how we could integrate easily without having any troubles. And honestly speaking, I'm yet to really see what the danger is about. I'm yet to have a personal experience. Yeah, a few times I see certain things I'm not very comfortable with. I might not be very impressed with police response, you know, to calls and all that. I've had a few experiences in which I felt, oh, I expected more than this. But on the average, I will say, when it comes to that danger, it's not as bad as I read. I think it was exaggerated, if I would say, because it's not been a bad environment, really. We found it easy to live in peace, and we've not come across such issues. We may read about them, maybe we're not around where it happens, but God has also been faithful. He's going to protect us. So even if the danger is around us, he said we may see them, but they're not going to come near us. But we are not, we're not even seeing them anyway. So that's been my experience.
Yeah. And again, church, so on one of the podcasts over a year ago, we were speaking to a missionary, and we were talking about how the UK is changing, and in particular how Middlesbrough has gone from being, I think it was 98% white, indigenous, local people just 15 years ago to now having more diversity. And we were praying, how can we encourage people from different nations to come and join the church? And the missionary said something obvious, and he said, first of all, just start praying. So that's what we started doing. We started praying that people who moved to the UK who were saved would come and join us, and that we'd be able to do outreach to those who weren't from the UK, who aren't Christians. And a year ago, we went from being a predominantly white church to now we're a predominantly West African church. We have people from Nigeria and Ghana. We've got somebody from Iran, people from India. It's wonderful to see. So apart from the sovereignty of God, what do you think is bringing more and more people to our churches, and how can we do better at welcoming people, and how can we help serve people who are new to the UK and to our communities?
Oh, wow, fantastic. As you were speaking, I was thinking, and only one thing kept coming to my mind. I think it's the rule of thumb. Everybody responds to love. Love is the greatest gift. You know, love is of God. Love is God. Love is everything. Even dangerous people respond to love. And then talking of immigrants, people coming from a different culture, already there's some kind of psychological pressure, trying to learn the new things. How do things work here? How do I relate with people? Definitely is going to come with some differences. Yeah, different cultures anyway. But then when people like that see love, you know, acts of love come towards them, especially in the church where it's mostly expected, everyone will feel comfortable. Everyone wants to be in that kind of atmosphere. Everyone wants to feel loved. Everybody wants to feel that's a measure of comfort. And I will say, if the church can walk and focus more, I mean, the church in general in places like this can be very conscious of the acts of love, showing love, and truly people, even those who don't know Christ, will get attracted to that kind of body. They want to be a part of the body. They want to be a part of the community that has been so loving to receive me. Some people come in here with severe inferiority complex cases. Some people come in thinking, oh, we've come into a country where we're going to come across a lot of racism, tribalism, and all sorts. And then some people already have that in their mind, and it affects the way they relate with people. And then they could even naturally develop some level of hostility, even when it is not necessary. Yeah. But then when such people come in contact with love, you know, it negates what they already have, you know, on the background, and they respond with joy. And love is also contagious. They may also become more loving people, even if they were not from the beginning. And sincerely, I will say I've experienced it. Even when I went to churches that I did not really like in terms of doctrine, I think they were very good in their expression of love and acceptance. And I've also enjoyed a lorry load of that in the New Life Church. You know, that I recall we once had a conversation too, when you were telling me of your experience becoming a believer, yourself and Rachel, how that you had been dejected by some set of people who had looked down on you, and then you were accepted into the fold, and that really had a lot to do. It's really worked on your heart, and then it has made you who you are today. I believe there are a lot of people also out there who don't understand the person of Christ and the prayer, the fastest way to bring them to the fold, to make them understand this gospel we preach is first and foremost to show it in acts of love, which I believe is the rule of thumb, thumb approach. You know, God is love, so that's all we have to give.
Yeah, it's something that I've been encouraged with is seeing how the Nigerians within New Life and the Ghanaians within New Life, every week they come with somebody and they may be living with them or helping them out. And I'm like, oh, is this a friend of yours? And we only met them last week. So that the, how people who might have a very might not know people well, but they could be a friend of a friend, or they might never have met them before, but because the Nigerian or the Ghanaian, they take them under the wing and they look after them and they share their homes, and so this community that the that we are seeing in New Life Church amongst the West Africans is quite humbling, encouraging, but also convicting to see how different the community is within West Africa and how many people look after strangers, and compared to what we do within the UK, where we're very individualistic and we tend just to be in our own homes and don't mix well. So how have you found that, the difference in the attitudes towards community and individualism within the UK?
Yeah, it's been interesting. I think that's the word. It's been interesting. You're very correct if you say Africans generally love this, communion, fellowship, party together, do things together. You see the crowd. Even, I must say, maybe that's why the church has a lot of population, even back in Africa. People just want to be around each other, they feel life is boring when you don't have many people around, the more the merrier. And as good as that may be, it's going to have its side effects, because you can't be in such a kind of setting and not have enough stamina to tolerate people. That's where you get yourself exposed to certain dangers. You know, you might end up mingling with the wrong set of people, because, of course, you most likely will have no borders. And I think every African somehow who has grown up back there must have had their fair share of getting some, bashes in the process of generally relating, and not even just about the church now. And here in the UK, like you said, individualism, it's a kind of quiet life. And for someone like me, I've enjoyed the quiet life. You know, it's one of the things I'll call one of the benefits I will say I have enjoyed here is the quietness. You know, spending time with family, having that private, you know, relationship with your own circle. That also has a side effect, because it could just be, if any of the extremes are not good enough, because even as Christians, I think our level of privacy has been, you know, punctured, because we have to relate with people if we have to operate as salt and light as we should. So we can't just be salt and light within the four walls of our families, you know. Yeah. So, but then I have personally enjoyed the quietness in the environment, the quietness, the, you know, the comportment where people don't just barge into you anyhow, the curtsy, you know. It's more celebrated here, and I have personally enjoyed it.
Yeah, that's interesting to see. That although I was focusing on the negative side of individualism, there is a positive side where you get to share time with your wife and your children, and in a way that might not have been possible elsewhere. But I think I really liked what you said there about how can you be salt and light if you just stay within your four walls? So it's about that balance, isn't it? Getting that balance between being in community but also fulfilling responsibility to those that are the closest to you. And I think that's a balance that we all struggle with. Whether we want to be in community constantly or on our own, we've got to try and meet in the middle.
Exactly. the balance is key. Yeah. None of the sides, you know, both of them are two different extremes where you don't just want to be on one side. You need a little bit of the two. Yeah. And then get a balance, find equilibrium point.
Yeah. Oh, cool. And again, I was just thinking about churches on a Sunday. You joined a church, New Life Church, which was in a transition. It was going from being a very small church plant that was kind of monocultural in transition to becoming a functioning church that was very multicultural. So some things have changed very quickly and other things have been a lot slower to catch up. And in particularly, I'm thinking the worship, and I know everything we do when we come together is worship, but in particular the singing and the praise and the hymns. How have you found that coming into a very conservative? Because when you started, we didn't even have any musicians, so the musicians we had have only just learnt in the last year. So,
yeah. Well, it's a great change. Yeah, it's a great change. I've really struggled with adapting. Yeah. Just that, I really struggled with adapting. You know, African churches are not very conservative when it comes to their styles of worship and music. You know, it's it comes with so much fun and expression.
Mm.
You know, and when I was in London, I joined a few churches. You know, visited a few churches rather, and it wasn't different, so to say, from what I know in African churches. But coming to Middlesbrough, wow, it's completely orthodox. And you know, the advantage of that is this for me, in as much as it was a culture shock, the advantage of that for me is that it made me seek more of what is core. I'd gone to a few churches and I'm like, when it comes to music, it's not the kind of music I would have said I preferred. No drums, no dancing. We're just standing there and reading hymns. But in the middle of that, I was able to still find some essence because these hymns on their own have their own angles of ministration, even to your heart.
Yeah.
It doesn't come with so much distraction. And then it makes me see like, okay, if I don't get the music, the kind of music I'm used to, then I must get the word.
Mm.
Then I must go all out for that. So somehow it's not really been of any negative effect on me because I could always balance that out somehow. I could always watch those kind of church music on my TV. I could always watch online because despite the fact that coming to church here is a kind of community building to where you come with people with like minds in Christ. It's also, it also comes with that spiritual consciousness for me that I'm going to church today because I believe there might be something that God has to say that maybe I'm not getting in my closet, my quiet time. I just want to go to where the people of God are gathered, like when brethren come together in unity and God somehow has something to drop. You know, it could just be a line from the whole day. It could be from the hymn. It could be from anywhere. But the kind of calmness that is also in that kind of circle has its place of creating an environment for your heart to accept things easily.
Hmm.
So just like I've been saying, every side has its own advantage, even if you don't feel you're comfortable with it every time. So I just focus on the benefits of every kind of situation, and I stay put.
And that's encouraging, I think, for smaller churches, for churches like New Life Church, who might not have a lot of gifted musicians or preachers, or we don't have the razzmatazz that some churches have, where they've got large congregations and wonderful buildings and equipment. Because it's encouraging to hear as a pastor that people are joining the church because of the word of God, because of how the people love one another and how people stay because they want to hear what God has to say. Despite the tastes might be different, the expressions might be different. They are hearing God speak through either the words of the hymns or through the preaching. So that's encouraging. But what I don't want to do is stay right. Because people are coming, we don't have to change. Because what I would like to see is, as the pews become diverse, we want to see the leadership and the worship and our expression become diverse and reflect the congregation as well. So what are some of the ways that we at New Life and other churches could adapt to encourage the emphasis maybe is changing and the culture becoming more reflective? How can we do that?
Yeah, in my opinion, I think the almost the only way, there might be other ways, but for now, that's the only thing I can think about, is that can be achieved from getting people involved as much as possible. Mm-hmm. Of course, that doesn't imply that because we want the inclusivity, it shouldn't also be abused. Which I've noticed that kind of discipline too since I came in, that has not been abused. And since that has been in good shape, getting people involved will bring diverse flavors. If we all have Christ as our center, we don't have doctrinal issues, you know what to expect. This one knows God and there's nothing funny somewhere around the line and you could feel, oh, this can be misleading. We all have diverse flavors. It's like a football team. If you want to bring out the best from the team, every single player has his own part. You know, Lionel Messi may be called the best in the world, but he's going to be a victim at the goalpost. You know, he won't be able to do anything there. He may score goals and dribble. So meaning that single-handedly, he can't achieve what a team wants to achieve. Single-handedly, can't win the trophies for the team, in as much as he's a very integral figure in every team. So every other person is important. So it's when you bring the team together with individual skills, individual ideas and styles, not going off doctrine, mm-hmm. because some styles could, you know, slowly go off the doctrine and one might not just notice and before you know what's up, you're like, what's going on here? So, of course, once there are some levels of controls to, you know, determine limits, and of course, it has to be taken slowly. Now, I think I'm speaking more administratively because this is some administrative skills will have to come to play to know how to, you know, introduce different kinds of flavors. And I think with that, when people start to showcase themselves, we get to see the qualities, the strengths, of every individual within the body of Christ and the four walls of the church. And since it's quite obvious that to a very large extent, everybody has the same mind for the cause of Christ and the same mind for fellowship. And we may not be at the same level of understanding, which is normal for every system, but then all of us have that center understanding of what we are made up of and why we are gathered. And I think that is one of the best measures of control that one can get when people start getting involved to showcase their giftings towards the worship. Permit me to add something close to that. I think this is one of the beautiful things I enjoy about the church here in England. Church in Africa has a different and similarly dangerous kind of formation. It's quite unfortunate, but I have to be honest here, because it's one of the challenges we face back home. I mean, the church in general. Yeah. You see a lot of people in church in Africa, a whole lot of people. Like, I'm sure if you see the crowd, you will wonder, what's going on here? Like, even if it has to be in the middle of inconvenient situations, vigils and all sorts, you see the crowd and you're like, wow, what a people so conscious of God and all of that. But these same people, to be honest, go back into the world and they don't represents any salt and light. Mm. So that's why you look at the society, you look at the community, and it looks so corrupt and downgraded when it even comes to typical, you know, moral values. Because the same people who you see in the world causing problems in the world, the same people have found themselves in the church and also claiming to be Christians. If they find themselves in the church, not claiming to be representatives of Christ, yes, we can always find a space for them. It's part of the mission anyway. But then these people also occupy pulpits. They also take very important roles in church. And then you get back to work and you're like, what's going on here? So it makes a few people who really understand what they are in for to feel alone. Like, is there anybody thinking like I'm thinking? It's like the world has come into the church has gone into the world, and you find it so difficult to get an identity. It's one of the weaknesses that I feel the African church has. And one of the things that has made it this bad is because, you know, as especially for the third world countries who have, you can classify as underdeveloped countries, the level of poverty is so bad that if I set up a church in Nigeria today, one of the selling points for me is to tell the poor people that when you come to church, God is going to make you rich. God is going to increase your financial status. When you come to church, God is going to heal you of your diseases. When you come to church, God is going to clothe you. He's going to buy you cars. He's going to make you comfortable. Yes, God can do these things. But these are common graces. This is the same God that causes the sun to shine on the good and the bad. So the reason why you have the sound health, the reason why you have the money, the reason why you're comfortable is not necessarily because you gave your life to Christ. Because there are a whole lot of people who are enemies of God, and God still attends to their needs. They are common graces. Mm-hmm. So if the foundation from the moment you're stepping into the church, you don't have an understanding, and then you grow into becoming a pastor, you're going to pass the same virus down. Mm-hmm. And then you just realize that what's going on here. Now, the beauty of churches in England is that people don't go to church. That's the way it is, because they don't need your church. I don't need your church to have sound health. The systems are working. I'm going to see the doctor. I don't need your church to have a quality career advancement. I don't need your church to be happy. I don't need your church to achieve whatever I want to achieve. As a matter of fact, the richest men in the world, many of them are pagans. They don't believe in God, atheists. And these guys perform better in the marketplace. That's the truth. So then if you have one of these unbelievers come to church and all you have to say is that God is going to give you money, how do you say that to Bill Gates? I mean, so what is your message? Yeah. I should be the one lecturing you on how to make money. I should be the one sitting down with your pastor to tell him how life works.
Yeah.
So, but then I think the average church in Nigeria has gotten that wrong. Mm. And it's because they've taken advantage of how bad the economic system has been as a result of bad leadership, not because God has not blessed these countries, but bad leadership has made the environment so terrible that some people have taken advantage of that, even using the church as a cover. You call them in, you drop 10 pounds, and God's going to bless you with 10,000 pounds. Like, how? How exactly? And then after I drop my 10 pounds, I don't see the 10,000 pounds, and I'm angry with the pastor, I'm angry with God. I don't know why I dropped in the first place, you know? So the system in itself has affected the church and its setting. And that's what you don't find in the UK. Anyone who walks into the church is coming in with a meaning. Because what else does the church want to give to me? The church is not giving me money. It's not giving me sound health. It's not giving me anything. So if I come into that fellowship and I stay there, it's because my coming there has a meaning. There's something that comes to mind. There's a kind of arrest, you know, something that transcends what my eyes can see, what my hands can touch, mm-hmm. something that a mere man cannot understand. And that is the way, you know, it should be. That's the way it should be. When Jesus was on earth, he always gathered the crowd, you know, and we had experiences when they all left. And it's more like, oh, you didn't seek me because of this and that. This is what you came for. you want to eat bread, you want to do this. And at some point, he even asked his own disciples, would you also go? Mm-hmm. You know, and Peter gave a very important response that every Christian should pay attention to, that where do we go? Thou art the words of eternal life. Now, he has said something beyond what eyes can see. So he asked him, where do you want me to go? This is who you are. So the reason why I'm with you is with a meaning. I'm not with you for every other thing everybody comes for. If you provide those things, I'm going to partake from the benefits. Yes, but they are common graces. You know, unfortunately, you see the big churches, and then one of the ways to do a kind of acid test is to just look at a church. When you see a big church, the first thing that comes to my mind is this really the church? Because I'm wondering, can this number of people have the same understanding? Yes, we desire it that way, but in reality, is it the case?
Yeah.
So it might be a little bit extreme for me to say this, but for a better way to explain it, let me just say one of the best ways to identify a growing church in the eyes of Christ, in my opinion, is a reduction in number in a place like Nigeria. Because when the church grows in number, I'm not saying it's exactly that way, it's just to buttress my point. When the church increases in number, it might be one of the pointers for you to check. I hope something is not wrong in here. Because if we are top-notch in doctrine, we are top-notch in the things, it's core. We let them understand that, you know what? God is not the one who is responsible for this. You are responsible for it. He's your father. He's going to take care of you. But you don't receive Christ as just your Savior. He is also your Lord. When you get into that depth, and it shows in your teachings, it shows in the things that the church upholds, naturally it's going to reduce in number, because now I know I have a responsibility towards God.
Yeah.
But when everything goes, you know, you get the numbers, you get the offerings, you get the tithes, and of course, that's good business. At least for the business man.
Yeah. Unfortunately, we have that in the UK as well, especially... especially in areas of poverty, they try and we give a social gospel rather than the true gospel. We try and hit people, give them hope for the wallet or for the future rather than for eternity and for salvation. And especially with certain Christian TV programs promoting, a lot of churches will put on a big show. Pastors, they might not be preaching a false gospel, but they're more concerned with numbers, some of them, than with whether people actually believe in what's being preached. So as pastors and as congregations, we have the same temptations and trouble. But I just think the difference is less people are interested in the gospel. There's more of a rejection of the church in the UK than there is in Africa. Whereas a lot of people see the church as the enemy, as homophobic, as bigoted. And so I don't think the attraction is as big, but I do think we still have the same problems, but maybe on a smaller scale. And And again, where poverty is greater, that is probably where you get the most.
That's the weapon.
Whereas, like you say, the poverty in the UK relatively is, we have poverty, but we have running water, we have a health service, we have it's easier to be poor in the UK than it is in Nigeria. So again, there's less need for the poor than there is in Africa, I imagine.
True. So when you see people go to church here in the UK,
yeah,
there's something more than the ordinary.
Yeah.
Except it's for the community, you know, or let me just go maybe for the connections and all that.
Yeah.
But I want to believe that most people who find their way to the church, they have a meaning somewhere. They have a meaning somewhere. They've been able to understand the concept of Matthew 5 from 45 that says it causes the sun to shine on the good and the bad. Those that do good and those that do wrongly, God is responsible for their welfare. He is the one who still causes this thing. He upholds all things by the word of his power. He is the one responsible for everything. So if you have that understanding already, then you know that. So what makes me different as a believer? It's not these material things. There must be something deeper than what the eyes can see. Yeah. And I think that's the point that the growth should take place from.
Yeah, definitely. And again, I think just touching back on the worship, hopefully, now you're being brought in the membership and Illusion, and we've got a few other capable musicians from Nigeria, the flavour of the worship will change. We have a conference in the 30th of June and the 1st of July. That is the annual Medhurst Ministries Weekender at New Life Church. And hopefully you'll be able to showcase some of your skills there, brother. You and Illusion have asked if you could.
Oh, with all pleasure. It's been a while.
That would be great. And really looking forward to see how the church develops and grows over the coming months and years as we see more and more members coming in from not just West Africa, but from around the world. It's really encouraging.
Yeah.
It's been great chatting with you. It's been wonderful.
Beautiful experience.
Great. And I'll also let everyone know when you'll be doing worship at the church as well, so that'll be good.
I'll be glad. With all pleasure.
Awesome.
I'll be glad.
Thanks for joining me on the In Context podcast.
It's my pleasure. Thank you so much for the opportunity. See you.